Okay, so let's make a simple point then. So, Truma starts off with the fundraiser, which is something I talked about last year, why it is that the fundraiser is so central to this. But once you get to that, you get this interesting feel of what is being collected. You get Zora Truma, Asher Tikhu Meitam, Zahava Chesef, Unechosherut, Chelet, Vargaman, Vetulad, Shani, Vesheish, Vizim, Verore Lima, Damim, Veros, Tachashim, Vatse, Shitim, Shemin Lama, Or, Visamim, Shemin, Hamishcha, Doctor, Samim, Avne Shom, Avne Milim, Life, Ovela Choshen, Vazuli Mikdash, Shachanti, Vetocham. You have this very detailed description of the materials that are used for the Mishkan, and they are regal. They are, it's gold and silver and jewels and very expensive dyes, right? Chelet and argaman, royal, what?
Wood.
Yeah, but
and in a desert.
Yes, exactly. But high quality dyes, right? Royal blue, royal purple. Which makes sense because this is a mikdash. Except there's a tension here, because if you go into the Mishkan, indeed, what you feel is this extreme opulence. Yes, good word. That was the word I was thinking.
Yes.
Yes? Except what if you look on the outside? The Beit HaMikdash, the actual Mikdash, also on the outside, is very impressive structurally. It's on a mountaintop, made of stone, beautiful.
Isn't the outside made of the dyed skins?
Yeah, it's a tent. And what is in fact it referred to in
the Olmoed?
It's a tent of meeting. And what do we do in the tent of meeting? We meet God. That's what we do. Moshe goes in and he meets God. That's what it's there for. And it has two names. It's both the Mishkan, but it's also the Ohel Moed. And if you think about how it's oriented in the camp, it's a big and fancy tent, admittedly. It's pretty large. But from the outside, that's what it looks like. A big tent in the middle of an encampment of tents, huts, structures, traveling through the desert. This is a desert, after all. And it seems to be that there is this duality to the Mishkan that it is maybe best represented in these two physical realities and these two descriptions. Then on one hand, it's the Mikdash Mishkan, right? It's a temple and it's a Mishkan, which is maybe a slightly more elevated word of living place. And it's the place which is regal and it's just overflowing with gold and silver. But on the other hand, it has this identity as an ohel, as maybe a fancy home, but a home. And on the outside, it doesn't look impressive. It looks big. It looks like it's owned by a richer person, right? But it's not fundamentally, it's not qualitatively different, right? It's not this huge stone structure on the mountaintop. And the Mishkan seems to therefore have both of these elements on purpose. A regality to it, but almost a simplicity to it. Because on the one hand, it represents God, who is king and transcendent and beyond. But on the other hand, the point of the Mishkan is that God is imminent, that he's meeting us, that he moves with us, right? He travels with us, that it's collapsed and rebuilt every time we move. Now, some of that is lost in the Mikdash. Right, the Mikdash is much more heavily emphasizing the regality. But it's also God's permanent home, and we are also in our permanent homes. Right? Meaning David when he's talking about why he needs a place for the Aron, because he said, look, I've built a place for me, so I need a place for the Aron. And as our dwelling becomes more permanent, so God's dwelling, so to speak, becomes more permanent and more majestic. But when the Jews are living in much more simple terms, so the Mishkan reflects that. And I think that complexity of the Mishkan, like I said, highlights the what it is doing. On the one hand, right, you go to the Mishkan to be inspired, and anyone who thinks they're not inspired by physical grandeur, I mean, maybe you're not, but most people are, right? Most people, at the end of the day, right, the Mishkan is a place where we want to inspire people, and we recognize that most people are, in fact, not just taken in by a good shir and a good inspirational thing and sitting and reading philosophy all day, but actually they need, right? Heschel really develops this tremendously throughout his writings, that there is a critical importance in religion to wonder. Right? Because the feeling of wonder is what makes you feel like there's something beyond. Right? That moment of wonder, whenever you have it, is, you can't always put your finger on the fact that there's something beyond, but whenever you are stand in awe of something, right, for a moment you acknowledge the fact that there's a limit to what you actually can understand in a real quantifiable way. Right, that moment, right, he writes about this with nature. Right, that moment where you see the majesty of the Alps, right? For a moment you can understand it, but you feel something which you can't quite put your finger on. And that is what allows us towards spirituality. So the Mishkan, on the one hand, is doing that. You come in and you're just completely overwhelmed by the opulence, right? See, now it's smiling. By the gold and the silver and the... right, every royal thing, yes, in the middle of a desert. Suddenly you walk into this tent and there are pure gold structures, lamps and tables, which we call the Shulchan and the Menorah, but... and you know, royal blue and royal purple everywhere. I'll finish quickly because I can't. So on the one hand, you have that, right, which is meant to inspire you and make you think big. But on the other hand, the Mishkan's goal was very much to remind people that that same God who inspires awe and wonder and is regal and majestic is also the one who defines his home not just as a Mishkan and a Mikdash, but as an Ohel Moed, a place where you meet him in the middle of the camp, and his house is fundamentally like everybody else's, if bigger because he's the king and God, but it's still a place which is defined as an Ohel, as a home among you, right, where he wants a relationship. And that duality is the secret, I think, to the Mishkan at a very, very simple level.